The date is November 17th, 1995, and we're watching It Takes Two. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Amanda Lemon to my Alyssa Calloway.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week, we are looking back at November 1995, when the movies in theaters were Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, that's the theater I was in, Home for the Holidays, Fair Game, GoldenEye, and of course our movie for today, It Takes Two, which earned $19.47 million on a mystery budget. Couldn't find anywhere what this budget was. Couldn't even find, like, comparable Olsen twin movies. Like, no Olsen twin movies have a listed budget or the few that I actually know titles of.
I mean, if you had to guess the budget, what would you guess?
I don't know. 10 mil?
Hasn't it say, like...
The camp is an actual camp in Ontario that is still functioning to this day.
Oh, wow.
And the mansion was someone's mansion. So it's like you have pretty much two locations for most of the movie.
Yeah, my guess would be like in the 5-6 million range, but
okay. I mean, I guess I was highballing it. I could go $5-6 million too. I thought you were going to say something higher.
No.
Okay.
I'm a little bit shocked that this movie only made $19 million though.
Yeah.
Especially for being a theatrical release. But maybe I'm just overthinking.
You're overestimating.
I'm overestimating the power of the Olsen twins.
The Olsen twins, yeah.
Clearly.
They may be smarmy businesswomen now, but back in the day, they were just these plucky Full House kids that, I don't know, just didn't have enough of a fan base. They couldn't draw JTT numbers, that's for sure.
Dang. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, like the discovery of an identical stranger, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Oh, shit. Spoiler alert on the taglines, too. I found two taglines for this movie, and the first is two identical strangers, two different worlds, one perfect match.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And the other tagline, when it comes to making the perfect match, two heads are better than one, especially if they look exactly alike.
Is that last that to, last part's part of it or no?
Yeah. I know we're not on a video podcast here, so I did put my hands on my hips. But yes, I feel like that's how it has to be read. But that is part of the tagline, especially if they look exactly alike. Feels like one of those, you know, 80s sitcoms where you would see them standing back to back.
Yeah.
She's an upper crust millionaire. She's from the slums. But they're exactly alike. Fridays at 9. Well, those may not be very good descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
I don't think I'm too far off here. Amanda is an orphan with an attitude who lives in a children's home in New York City. Alyssa, the pseudo-princess daughter of a multimillionaire communications mogul. For reasons unexplained, they look exactly alike despite having no relation.
After reasons unexplained.
After a disappointing meeting with her prospective adopters, the Buttkisses, Amanda heads to Camp Calloway with her orphan pals and her social worker slash confidant, Diane. Meanwhile, Alyssa, fresh off a plane from boarding school, heads to her family's summer house on Lake Minocqua to meet her dad, Roger, and his shiny new fiance, Mrs. Clarice Kensington. One day, Amanda and her pals go to check out the Calloway mansion, believing that it's haunted. Well, after discovering her incumbent stepmother is more of a gold digger and an overall terrible person, Alyssa decides to run away from the mansion and heads towards the camp. After mistaken identities ensue and they get a brief glimpse into each other's lives, both girls run back home through the forest where they collide into each other and begin to piece together what is going on. Oh, I mistakenly wrote, the twins decide to switch places and realize life isn't so bad on the other side. They also realize that Roger and Diane would make a great couple and set about conspiring to get them together. Their plan starts to work when Diane and Roger do start to hit it off, but when Clarice catches wind of this development, she drastically moves up the wedding day. With little time to spare, Diane must go rescue Alyssa from the Buttkisses and bring her to the church in time for her to be at the wedding. Whew! When she arrives, Roger realizes that he does love Diane, and he dumps Clarice at the altar, and the four of them presumably live happily ever after.
Presumably.
With Vincenzo. Let's not forget him.
Yeah, the five of them. Yeah, sorry that I interrupted your 60-second synopsis there. I just couldn't hold it back any longer. Like, that unexplained why these two look alike. I mean, I can't wait to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you brought forth It Takes Two, and this is one that I have never seen. In fact, my history with the Olsen twins is Full House. They have a pretty badass sister in the MCU. And that when I worked at the video store, for some reason, the Olsen twin movies would fly off the shelf. I have never seen an Olsen twins movie. The extent of their acting career that I know is Full House.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
You didn't watch In a New York Minute?
Didn't watch In a New York Minute. I know a lot of them. Like, I know of a lot of them. How the West Was Fun. I know they had, like, just this whole mystery series, Mary-Kate and Ashley's Mysteries, you know, things like that.
I feel like the early Olsen twins movies, to me, are kind of, like, I put them in the same vein as, like, the Ernest movies.
Okay.
They have that same type of feel.
Childlike quality.
Yeah. And I always think of It Takes Two as being kind of their first foray into
real movies,
like big theatrical, like big studio produced movies, but
yeah.
After seeing the box office take and the fact that there's no budget, I'm starting to think maybe In a New York Minute or whatever is their, I mean, that was their first big one, and I think it's their last movie. They did it when they were like teenagers.
Well, but I do have a thought on that, but we'll wait until we get into the movie, because first I want to hear why you have thrust It Takes Two upon my life.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure I'm the same age as Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. And
Okay. Clearly
our lives have diverged into different paths. But
what? No.
Watching these guys, growing up with these girls on Full House, you literally as a child felt like you grew up with them. And they were such a sensation, I feel like, for my age group at the time that... Yeah, I watched, like, How the West Was Fun. I remember the Halloween one. And then this movie came along, and it was just, like, the talk of my elementary school class.
Yeah. See, I was in high school when this movie came out. I was in grade 11.
Yeah, okay. And I remember really enjoying the movie and thinking it was a lot of fun. Other movies that I loved that came out around this time would have been, like, Harriet the Spy with Michelle Trachtenberg. But yeah, I always really enjoyed this movie and had really fond memories of it. But then I grew up and I don't think I've seen this movie in probably close to 25 years.
Okay, right on.
It, to me, it's like the literal epitome of the show's title. Okay. I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I just was not of the generation. I knew the sensation, but I was not of the generation. You know, it makes more sense when it rhymes, see? Or it sounds more profound when it rhymes. So, well, yeah. Okay, let's jump into It Takes Two, directed by Andy Tennant, who went on to direct, like, movies like Hitch and Sweet Home Alabama and The Bounty Hunter. Like, this guy has some credits. It's produced by Jim Cruikshank and James Orr, and it's written by Deborah Dean Davis. So one of the things that I found out in my light Googling that I do is that this was, like, not originally pitched as a Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movie.
Hmm.
It was originally going to go, like, full, like, Parent Trap with the idea of a split-screen twin situation. Like, they were originally looking at Mara Wilson, who did Matilda instead.
Matilda, yeah.
And Christina Ricci, who did Casper instead.
Can we keep her?
Arguably both better choices of movies to be doing. Like, as I looked into this, so much of the trivia in the IMDb section is alternate castings. Like, it's crazy what they were looking for in this movie. Like, for Vincenzo, you know, everyone from Mel Brooks to... I don't even remember. I didn't even bother writing them down, because as I went, it's like, you know, these lists of alternate castings are so long that eventually I'm going to stumble across my own name on the list. Like, it's... But it was fascinating to find out, though, that, like, they were looking at a possibly bigger movie. Oh, Vincenzo, another one was Patrick Stewart. Anthony Hopkins. They pitched it to those guys. They all turned it down. And there were so many cases where it was like, oh, yeah, Tim Robbins turned down the role of Roger because he was doing Dead Man Walking instead. Like, so many of them turned down to do, like, a much better movie. But... Having never seen this movie, I will say right off the bat, I kind of loved it. I kind of loved this movie.
We can say Casper and Matilda are better choices, maybe, but
they're more successful choices.
I think that's a better term. I would say I enjoyed this movie more than I enjoyed those two movies.
Yeah. Yeah. True. So we open this movie with, like, this rich opulence and you know, this grand piano concert that's going on with one of the twins. We're at Windsor Academy, and we're cutting back and forth between the other Olsen twin playing baseball with a jazzy soundtrack, and we find out that both Olsen twins are doing different accents. We've got some heavy acting going on from the Olsen twins here. The one with the Brooklyn accent. Hey, I'm the tough Olsen twin. And then the other one with, like, a British accent, even though Steve Guttenberg is not British. Is it just because she's been schooled in Britain? Is that why?
Yeah, it fades in and out. I was, like, trying to keep track of how British her accent was, but...
Yeah.
I love the Amanda accent. Just let me hit this one over the park, okay? Like, yeah. It's just so, so good.
Yeah. No, and having never really seen Olsen twins beyond Full House age, it's like, you know, it was nice to see them doing something. I guess they can act a little bit, you know? So, okay, so... Why is it never explained? I got to get into this right away. Why is there never any explanation for why these two girls look exactly alike?
The only real explanation, and I don't know that it is a good explanation, is that the movie lends from, I think it's a Mark Twain story, The Prince and the Pauper, where... In that same movie, or that story, it's like they are also of no relation, and it's just by, like, pure happenstance.
I've seen the Mickey Mouse version, yeah.
Yeah. That's really the only kind of explanation I can offer other than it's the Olsen twins.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I guess that's one way of doing it. I just kind of would have liked to have found out that Roger actually adopted whichever Alyssa. One is. Yeah. Alyssa, yeah. It would have helped me get like fully into it. That was the piece that was missing. Is it's like,
probably one of the funniest things to me about the movie is that it never occurred to me until I watched it now. Like when I was a kid, I just did not like that. Just was not even a thing I cared about.
It just was.
Maybe I believed that somewhere I could possibly run into somebody who just looked like me. I don't know.
Some doppelganger Colin walking around out there, yeah. I mean, and convenient that they both have A names and everything.
Yeah.
I think it's fair that she was, in the baseball game, I think it's fair that she was tagged out when she got into the cab. She never did touch the plate, did she?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not enough to go over the plate. You have to make contact.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's a legit rule, even in real baseball. Like, to make it home, you have to actually touch the plate. That's why when you have those real dramatic baseball movie scenes where somebody dives in and they just make it with the tips of their fingers.
Yeah, she should have slid under the car first. That's what she should have done.
I was thinking when I was watching this, I've kind of forgot about the concept of orphanages. There's something I really only think of in, like, Victorian England. And
please, sir, can I have some more? More?
Yeah. And so I did some Googling, and orphanages were basically fell out of favor in favor of the foster care system. And I think they've pretty much been extinct, at least in North America, since about the 1960s.
Hmm. Okay. How full was this orphanage? Like, were all the kids at the camp from the orphanage?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay, because there's kind of seemed to be this desolate emptiness of the orphanage anytime you were actually inside there.
Yeah, you the just beds saw, were like, always the beds. Empty. Yeah, the beds yeah. were always empty.
So the camp was full, but I figured she was, like, the lone orphan kid. That was the vibe that was given off with this movie for me. I will say it took me a while to kind of realize who Kirstie Alley was in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like right off the bat, I didn't quite understand who this. Yeah. I did have to take a minute to realize what was going on with the orphanage and everything.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought that I remembered wrongly, this will probably, these things will happen probably more in the episode, but I find it a weird thing whenever you watch it, especially when you watch it as a young kid, is how much we talked about this with Dragonheart, like how much your mind creates its own movie out of what you're mm-hmm. watching.
Yeah.
And I remember Kirstie Alley's
self-made backstory.
Yeah. I remember Kirstie yeah. Alley's character being way more like wanting to adopt Amanda, but there's really only like the one throwaway line where she kind of just mentions like,
yeah,
they won't allow her to because of her salary, and you don't even know if it's true. It almost plays off as more of a like deflection
excuse. Yeah. I don't really want to adopt you, kid. Yeah No, and I got the vibe, but I could see how that could be ramped up in your mind, what you mm-hmm. decide to cling on to in that kind of situation. Yeah, and I feel like because they go from the baseball game and they go to, like, a possible foster placement, you know, it took me a minute to kind of realize that, oh, wait, she is sabotaging these. I didn't realize she was sabotaging them either. Yeah. It's like, why doesn't she want to get placed into a home? I don't get it. I like the gum. Other gum.
the butt kisses were every bit as like creepy as I remember them being.
I can understand why you wouldn't want to be placed there, yes. Yeah. But I didn't realize that this had been a pattern that was going on, though, is her rejecting other families up to this point. I didn't realize that was something, because that gets mentioned later on, does it not? Or am I now inventing that in my head?
I'm not sure, because at one point she mentioned, like, when she's, like, refusing to go on the bus to go to the camp, she says, like, oh, well, if they're the best I can do. So, like, to me, it seemed like it was more, like, not necessarily that she was sabotaging, but maybe she...
It was her last...
Maybe she, like, intended to sabotage that specific one.
I mean, she does say to Alyssa that, hey, I can drive away a family. I've got no, you know, like that. That's her whole thing. That's why she goes in on the drift. Yeah. Is I can drive that bitch away.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess maybe she's just adept when it comes to like the type of family she doesn't want, or if she gets like a bad vibe of them. Maybe both things are at play, where she's got no good families who are good in quotation marks families that are interested in her.
Yeah.
And then she's also sad because there aren't any good ones.
Yeah. Well, one thing I did notice is that a lot of the side characters are very outlandish. Like you mentioned the butt kisses and how terrible they are, you know, every bit as terrible as you remember. But it just seems like everyone except Kirstie Alley and Steve Guttenberg are like way over the top.
Yeah, like Vincenzo seems like he might be some sort of like mafia tied. He's in the sanitation business.
I mean, Miss Kensington is a bitch. Like Clarice is the worst right from the start.
Yeah, she's very good at playing that character.
Yeah,
I totally forgot. Like, I was like, where do I know her from? And she's—I don't know if you ever watched, if you watched Friends, but she's Carol for anybody who's a Friends enthusiast.
Yes. Oh my god, yes she is. Why is that just hitting me? Oh, that's awesome. Yep.
That's sure my one of my favorite scenes of the movie is that when Amanda is at the party, she goes to the party for Alyssa and she comes up, she's like, my brand new stepdaughter who I absolutely adore. And that's so good. But yeah, she's like such a shrill bitch of a woman. But apparently she's a good cook.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's true. What I did find funny is, as I was watching this movie, thinking back, way back to our Police Academy episode and our Short Circuit episode, where you were saying that the only thing you knew Steve Guttenberg from was It Takes Two. Just thinking about, oh my god, this is the Steve Guttenberg you knew, yeah. And then you went and watched those other ones. I tripped out on that for a moment, I have to admit, because he's so proper and cool. And so that's why it's like, oh yeah, like he's playing this like cool rich guy. Like, I see why your perspective on those other movies is really shone through for me in another way.
I always saw him as this stereotypical, like, rom-com male lead type guy, yeah.
I mean, the list, like I said, the list was so long of who could have played this character. But, I mean, I think that's one of the things that really drew me into this movie is it's like, oh, I love Steve Guttenberg. Aw. R.I.P. Kirstie Alley. You know, like, it's like, it was just this, I loved having those two. And I thought they really actually had some pretty good chemistry.
Yeah, I thought they had great chemistry. I thought Steve Guttenberg, I don't know, I still love him in this movie. I think he just plays such a good, lovable, like, dope.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of a dummy who's just, like, is looking for love.
He's definitely not a good father, though.
No. Like, so there are aspects of this movie that seem more sad now than they did when I was younger. Like, even the fact that, like, she's been in boarding school. And when they first meet in the movie, when he like visits her in her room and is like, oh, like, you know, we'll be able to, like, he says something to the effect of like, oh, we'll get to know each other again. It's almost one of those situations where it seems like Vincenzo is more of the father,
right? Yeah,
figure to her than he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he is definitely an absentee father. And I mean, he is so endearing when he does bring up the fact that it's like with Kirstie Alley, where it's, you know, well, I kind of got rich by accident. I just fell into this. Right. And so it's like, oh, OK, well, he's not old money, because he's definitely coming across as old money.
Yeah.
But he went from zero to abandoning father pretty quick as soon as he got money. It didn't take him long to change.
Maybe that was just an old school rich thing of like, you, if you get rich, then you have to send your kids off to boarding school.
Yeah.
I feel like now it would be like you get rich and then maybe you hire tutors to teach your kids at home or send them to like a nearby private school. But yeah. I don't know.
So the whole plot is brought together when the kids at the camp and the one kid dares them to go over to the house, which they think is like haunted and abandoned. So they dare the one twin to go ring the doorbell. But they find out that it's
before
not.
That, like, let me ask you this. Like, at one point, you see the kids looking through the window in the telescope at the house.
Yeah.
Like.
And they see Miss Kensington go by, that part?
No, because I think that's when they're out there. They're in the yard at that point. I was going to ask, like, I don't know about you, but that house for a tiny little kid seems like a minimum 8 hour jaunt. Like you got to go around the lake. They're not canoeing, I don't think, across the lake.
Well, and I don't think they canoe much faster if they did. Yeah, that
like
is
it just looks far away.
Yeah, like they later on they drive from one side to the other.
Yeah,
yeah, they're gone all day. That's their activity for the day, is walking to the house.
Yeah. And then I'm just saying, like, it's seeming maybe if you start in the morning, you could get there and back in daylight. But I don't know. Or even their ability, like, to be honest, their ability, I guess if they're smart enough to just, like, you know, keep the water in eyesight, then you're going to be safe. But I'd be terrified of getting stranded out in those woods.
Yeah. Who knows? No, that's a whole day. They should have packed a picnic.
Unless maybe there's like, because I guess his wife was the one who set it up. So maybe that she had like a walking path created or something like that.
Right.
Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think I'd want easy access if I was sponsoring a camp.
Yeah.
There's orphan kids there. Fuck. Oh. I do like how the mistaken identity thing happens in this movie. That's for sure. I like the fact that the one kid has run away, so Vincenzo has given her a head start, and then the other twin happens to be standing there. And it was definitely clever that they dressed them kind of alike in the movie. I like that too. So that they were easy to mix up. Oh, yeah, they're wearing some sort of jean overall item and some sort of red shirt item.
Yeah, I think one of them's wearing, like more like an overall short type thing, and one's wearing, like, jeans and a
long pants, and, yeah, one of them has a long sleeve shirt and one's a short sleeve shirt, yeah. They are, though, very willing to just accept new adults. Both of them. Right? Like, she shows up on the doorstep, Vincenzo pulls her in, and it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm here now. Okay, cool. Right? And the other one, she just, oh, you're playing football? Sure, I'll just follow you, strange lady. You look sweet.
Well, I was going to say, like, Amanda I can kind of understand, because she kind of just gets grabbed and marshaled in and then she's kind of confused, trying to figure stuff out. But Alyssa is, like, just sitting on a rock by the lake when Diane shows up and is like, "Oh, I've been looking everywhere for you.
Yeah,
come on, let's go." And she's just like I don't know why. Like, if this is something that children do, then that's the stuff nightmares are made of. But like, wouldn't you just be like, "Excuse me, like, who are you again? Do I know you? Did my dad send you? Do you, like,
yeah."
You know, something
yeah,
other than...
I've never seen you before in my life. Yeah. Are you an employee of my dad's company? Yeah. I like the moment, though, when the Twilight Zone theme plays, when Amanda sees the portrait of Alyssa on the wall, the oil painting, the creepy-ass oil painting.
I wonder if either of the Olsen twins kept that.
Which one posed for it?
Yeah.
Makes you wonder how often they just, Mary-Kate, I don't feel like going into work today. Can you do my scenes today?
Well, apparently I was just looking through the trivia, there was the one scene towards the end when they're at the like the butt kiss scrapyard. One of them filled in for the other. I can't remember who played who, but
yeah.
Yeah, they switched roles for a sec.
Well, yeah, it's,
for a scene
in the credits, it's Mary-Kate Olsen played Amanda Lemon and
okay
slash Alyssa Calloway, and Ashley Olsen played Alyssa Calloway slash Amanda Lemon. So I guess Mary-Kate was Amanda pretending to be Alyssa. So that means that Ashley was Alyssa pretending to be Amanda, which means she was in the butt kisses yard, which means Mary-Kate was filling in for Ashley that day. Right?
Yeah.
I think I did.
I mean,
the math
that kind of
right.
That kind of checks out even in their real lives. Like, I've always thought Ashley Olsen seems like the more together kind of one, like the more proper one. And Mary-Kate Olsen seems like she's kind of the wild child.
Yeah, the party girl. I don't know. I don't follow enough Olsen twin, like, current day news to know any. I know they did fashion and then got weird. One of them dated a bunch of famous people. Like, didn't one of them date, like, fucking Heath Ledger or something? Or was it something?
Yeah, like, there's... Mary-Kate Olsen is often she was like one of the last person that Heath Ledger like called or text messaged or something
okay,
like that.
Right. That's the story that I remember. Yeah. Well, so they both get freaked out. One of them gets freaked out when she doesn't understand how football works, and the other one gets freaked out by the oil painting, and then the twins officially meet. And we officially decide to mix the twins up. I mean, this is kind of like the Parent Trap Olsen Twins edition is sort of what we got going on here. You know, are you familiar with the Parent Trap?
I kind of. I've never watched either the old one or the one with
Lindsay Lohan.
Lindsay Lohan, but.
Is it? I don't think it is, actually. Wait. Maybe, oh, no, it is Lindsay Lohan, yeah.
But I am familiar with it. But in that one, it's kind of like how you're saying. They do end up being, like, long-lost siblings, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
they're
exactly.
They're not strangers.
Yeah, and they're trying to figure out a way to bring their parents together or something. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen that one, too. But, yeah. I would have liked that connection. That's my biggest beef with this movie.
Yeah.
Have you ever had escargot?
No.
Okay. I'm wondering whether good, nice, chewy is like the right way to describe escargot. I've never had it either. I mean, maybe when I'm in Paris, you know, vive la France, I'll give it a try.
I don't run in those circles.
Yeah. Yes,
I'm more of a
chicken
nuggets and taquitos.
Apparently they have it at the Keg. It's one of the appetizers at the Keg. I've never tried it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or it was at one point. I remember. I didn't order it, though.
Well, I have a gift card to the Keg. Maybe I'll go try it out.
I like the subplot with the little boys. I wish they had used it a bit more with the little boys at the camp that think that she's a pod person because she starts acting a little strangely.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have a little bit more of a story, especially in the camp, because they all know her. Like, I like the scene where Amanda has to reveal herself to Vincenzo and she uses like all her scars and stuff.
Yeah. That was a great way to do it.
But it would have been cool if there was like an inverse story where like the boys know that she has some of these scars and so they're like looking to see if they're still there or if she's like, and then maybe be convinced that she's some sort of alien or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, you could have gone a bit further with that one. That would have been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever go to summer camp when you were a kid?
Not this kind of summer camp, no. I mean, I've mentioned it before, I believe, on the show, where I went to one that happened at Lakeland College in Vermilion, where it was basically like summer school, you know, the fun stuff, photography and theater and writing and stuff like that. But yeah, gotcha. Nothing where it was making, you know, canoeing across the river and making crafts and everything. I was never even much of a cub camper, right? Like the cub crew groups that I was part of when I was a kid didn't do a lot of camps. Like I did more cub camps as a leader when Chris was in camp cubs than I did with anything else. But yeah, no, never any like 2 week at a cabin on a lake. No.
Yeah, me neither. I never went to camp as a kid.
Yeah.
I did. My roommate, this was probably like 6 years ago, my roommate was like directing a boys' camp, and I went and I volunteered as like a camp counselor, and that was an experience.
But what, and it was a sleepover camp, not a day camp.
Yeah, it was like a week-long sleepover camp, and so basically I was kind of like looking after these kids. It was like a lot. It took me a while to like adapt to it, for sure. It was a lot of fun, but it's this place, if you anybody ever wants to look it up, it's called Plover Lake Bible Camp. Like, it's got like a jungle gym that it's in like a bunch of these, it's surrounded by a bunch of like rural farming communities.
Okay.
And I just remember the playground because it was, you could tell that it was all handmade stuff, probably built in like the 1970s by local farmers, would not pass any sort of like code
by today's standards. None whatsoever.
But the funnest stuff for a young boy to play on, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I even miss the days that playgrounds were made all of wood with big tires,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just dangerous shit. No, none of that anymore. You know, the wobbly bridge that you could launch people off of. No.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I mean, so homemade, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Would have been out of control.
I was just reading here that apparently John Candy was in the running to play Vincenzo. He was the first person they considered.
Yeah, and then he died before they could ask him. Yeah, I remember that one from looking at it, yeah. So there's a moment when Kirstie Alley, she's sitting talking to the one twin about kissing the frog, right? You know, when, you know, wait a minute, Amanda isn't usually scared of things like frogs. She's a pod person. But she's talking with Kirstie Alley, and she says this thing about kissing a frog, and she's only experienced kissing toads. And then she does this like really wild, like quick flashing movement with her tongue, and she says, "How else do you expect me to catch a guy?" It's very, very sexually suggestive at that moment. And then she ends it with, "Hey, I have an idea. Let's go spy on boys." It's not a good look, Kirstie Alley. It's you know, you're those boys are not are not age appropriate for you, lady.
You're teaching young girls how to be sluts.
Well, see, and then like later on, there's the moment where she and the Olsen twin are making pottery together, and it's like she's all straddled up like they are in Ghost. Where it's like, you know, there's a borderline inappropriate relationship going on with this child in Kirstie Alley. Maybe this is the reason why no one has allowed you to have a child.
Yeah.
You are not necessarily the best influence.
There's other factors, not just salary.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a few. I mean, you know, there are moments when she puts this child in danger as well. I mean, it's... I don't know.
I feel like this movie is also, like, one of my only touches with Kirstie Alley.
Yeah? Not a Cheers watcher or... Look Who's Talking.
I've seen a little bit, but I didn't really watch too much Cheers.
Yeah.
I watched Frasier.
Okay.
But I didn't watch too much Cheers.
Yeah. I guess that's that's funny. That's funny to me that with what I've thought about Steve Guttenberg stuff, for this to be your only touch with Kirstie Alley, it's like, oh, okay. I might have that lens with any future Kirstie Alley movies I watch.
Yeah, I've always thought, like, she was kind of, like, it's kind of funny to me. Like, she was clearly very talented, because I feel like she's just not, like, what I think of for, like, a Hollywood leading lady in the 1990s. Like, she's just so kind of, like, normal looking.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not a bombshell. She's attractive, but... That's
like
funny.
Around the time of thinking, like, this would have been like the Meg Ryan era of
true.
This type of movie.
True. Oh man, maybe I should have written down more of those names, because there were definitely some interesting choices for her, and also some interesting choices for Clarice too. Yeah.
I have it here. It's Winona Ryder was the director's first choice.
Yeah, that feels too young.
But the production company wanted Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah. Okay, I remember that one, yeah.
But the Seinfeld producers wouldn't let her. But then
Michael Richards was one of the Vincenzo choices. I remember that, speaking of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lori Loughlin, I could see her, yeah. Maybe it's just the Full House connection, but
yeah.
Gina Davis, Kim Cattrall, Mary Louise Parker, Sandra Bullock, Michelle Pfeiffer, Laura Dern, Joan Cusack, Harry Preston, Leah Thompson, Meg Ryan, Melody Griffith, Sigourney Weaver, basically every woman in Hollywood, it seems like, Susan Sarandon.
Well, and this is one that I'm remembering. Apparently, the part of Roger was actually written for Bob Saget.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But he was too focused on America's Funniest Home Videos at the time. So.
That would have been too much, I think, like, if you had... Lori Loughlin, the Olsen twins,
and Bob Saget.
Bob Saget, all playing like different roles.
Yeah, that's right. Dave Coulier playing Vincenzo. Cut it out. Yeah.
John Stamos is the butt kiss.
Yeah, there you go. Oh man, oh the butt kisses, the salvage yard. Well, why don't I talk about the Butt Kiss Salvage Yard and Sponsorship Corner? So, always on the lookout for product placements and movies, this week It Takes Two is brought to you by Coca-Cola, Sunkist and Sprite Sodas, Ford, Cadillac and Toyota Vehicles, Bluebird Buses, Windex, Elizabeth Arden and Coco Chanel, Cocoa Puffs, Scott Canoes, the New York Yankees, and MetLife, plus the fictional top executive jet, Butkus Salvage Yard, and Callaway Cellular. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Slip it in there with the butt kisses.
The Butkus Salvage Yard.
Ugh. Yeah, they're
Betty Butt Kiss.
They're pretty bad. They're pretty bad, and it's amazing how easily they brainwash all the children to, because I'm assuming all the children are foster placements, right?
Except the one.
Okay.
The one that they surprisingly looks so much like the dad, at least, that I was wondering if they were actually related.
So the management kid, is that the one that's actually related?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes more sense now.
Yeah, I think Ben Butkus. I mean, it's kind of rude to think that you could just have somebody change their name at, I don't know, 10, 11 years old, whatever she is.
How old she is, yeah. Yeah, no, that is a pretty...
That's a big ask.
Yeah. Yeah, at that point, they're kind of self-aware. They remember that stuff. So we end up getting our meet cute. The twins conspire, and they end up getting the meet cute on the horses. A very clever plan. However, I will say it's also a very high-risk, dangerous plan to be slingshotting something at the ass of a horse and hope that this amateur rider does not get bucked off and end up getting the Christopher Reeve treatment.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a high-stakes plan. Like,
very.
I grew up around horses, and I mean, they're not, you don't really want to fuck with those things.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things I noticed in trivia was them saying that if you look, they are doing most of their own riding. They are doing some pretty impressive stuff. Like, that's some pretty high galloping moments that they've got going on. And the majority of it is not stunt doubles. It's Steve Guttenberg and Kirstie Alley out there. That's good on them.
I was wondering if it was a stunt double for Steve Guttenberg that does the fall after he gets hit by the tree.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that takes talent to make that fall safe, mm-hmm. but also look like semi-real.
Yeah, because you saw him hit the ground. There was no pad. So I don't think that was him. That one had to not be him.
Yeah.
Had to. Yeah, I like Steve Guttenberg. I mean, why doesn't Steve Guttenberg get more? It's funny, I was watching an episode of the Goldbergs the other day, and Steve Guttenberg, of course, makes an appearance in that because he's one of the teachers on the show. But the episode was about Three Men and a Baby, so they were also watching Three Men and a Baby in the movie. And mm-hmm. so it's just funny seeing Steve Guttenberg in an episode that has his movie in it. That's probably done on purpose, but still.
I mean, I don't know if it's just like nostalgia taking over, but I'm kind of surprised that Steve Guttenberg didn't have more of a high profile career.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of just done like kind of small TV roles and movies I never heard much about, other than, you know, that old classic Chestnut, Lava Lantula.
That's right.
And Two Lava, Two Lantula.
That's right. Well, Steve Guttenberg and Tom Hanks had very similar early careers.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm surprised that I'm not hearing about Oscar winner Steve Guttenberg.
Where's his Philadelphia? Where's his Forrest Gump? You know, he's... Yeah, no, he goes on. He plays the camp. He likes being a B-movie star.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about with Michael Jai White. He just likes being the B guy.
Yeah, I guess.
Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah, well, Kevin Sorbo seems like he might be a gigantic douche, but
yeah,
hopefully fine. Steve Guttenberg's not that way.
No, Steve Guttenberg seems pretty chill. Yeah. Okay, so after they get the horses under control, like with the whole horse thing, actually, sorry, before they actually get the, you know, slap the horse on the ass, there is the moment where Kirstie Alley is just riding along and she's kind of singing to herself, and then she realizes that she's lost the child, and then she just goes, "Oh, well," and continues on. This is more evidence that this woman should not be in charge of this child.
She's not ready to take care of a kid.
I think Child Services has a very good case against allowing her to adopt a child. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'm just looking at Steve Guttenberg's IMDb, and I feel like he weirdly reprised his role as his character in Lavalantula in Sharknado 4. Like,
they're in the same universes.
Lavalantula are in the same universe.
Oh, wow. That's a terrible universe. You got shark tornadoes and giant lava spiders? Ooh, that's bad. Yeah. I forgot to mention that before we get our meet cute, they do get rid of the stepmom for a little while. She's going back off to the city to plan the wedding. And I do like the gum and the hair trick. That's some ace revenge right there. I like that one. Good touch. Yeah. And she comes back with the short haircut.
I mean, gum in the hair is a pretty terrible thing to do to somebody, but you really still do not feel bad for Clarice at any point in this movie.
How does he not see how bad Clarice is? Like, that's the thing. Like, how does he not realize what a terrible person? He's too fixated on the fact that his daughter just needs a mom. He realizes he's not around. And so, I'm going to bring in a parent. It doesn't matter if she's a giant bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does seem to be more of his concern, is that Alyssa needs a mom. Any woman will do. He just needs a bedfellow.
Yeah.
I did think it was a little presumptuous of Diane to be so, like, upset when he takes the call of his wife.
Yeah, a future wife. Yeah, it's...
Like, he's a billion... Like, it's kind of like... It weirdly, I'm like, oh, you're living out this weird Prince Charming fantasy that all women had in the 90s of, like, oh, this rich prince is going to come save you from your life.
What, don't you feel there should be a little part of it, though, where it's like, wait a minute, he doesn't want to tell me that he's married because he's actually into me?
Yeah.
I mean, pick up on the signs, girl.
Read between the lines.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's my Miss Kensington. You know, he wasn't good at covering. I don't know. Okay, so they end up, you know, later on, he comes by to try to take her out to lunch, and they end up having lunch in the mess hall. So when they're sitting there, you know, they're talking about the kids, and Steve Guttenberg says, "Tell me about it. I have one just like it at home," when he's talking, you know, they're talking about the girl that's always running away, right? I have one just, is that good writing, or is that just like a little too on the nose? I have one just like it at home.
I think it's a nice subtle ha-ha.
Yeah.
I don't mind it.
Okay. That one wasn't a little too cheesy for you?
No, I'm going to say no.
Have you ever been in a food fight?
No.
No?
And to be honest, I don't know that I want to be ever.
It does not look pleasant, does it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I've to this day always wondered if why they didn't do another take when he flicks the butter at her. Because don't you feel like it should have, like, he gets, like,
covered
in macaroni and cheese.
Takes a shower.
And the butter, when he flicks it, almost seems like it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, it just grazes her hair where, you know, wouldn't you... I'm thinking like a piece of, like, sloppy butter just hits her square in the forehead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that what I'm saying is, like, that butter flick is not enough to incite a food fight to me.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
Because she's just got to, like, shake her hair out and she's good to go for the rest of the day.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, he's got to throw that shirt out. He's not getting any of those stains out. That shirt's done. Oh. Yeah.
Have you been in a food fight?
No, I haven't. And I feel sort of like you. I don't think I want to be. I mean, I've seen some of those ones that are like overseas where it's like the largest tomato fight in the world and stuff like that.
Oh
You know,
shit,
like
I
in
have been
Spain,
in a
yeah.
food fight if we're counting that.
Oh, okay.
I've been to La Tomatina.
Okay. You've never been in a food fight
No,
and
I've
yeah,
never
okay,
been into like a flash food fight,
A flash food fight.
but I have been to
A planned food fight.
the giant tomato fights.
Okay. Nice. And was it worth it? Or did it just, did your eyes sting a lot?
Well, see, we got tips beforehand, so we came, me and my buddy came prepared with goggles.
Goggles, okay. That
So
makes sense.
that was key. Yeah,
Yeah.
you don't wanna be taking citrus to the eye. And the thing
Oh,
that they
man.
don't tell you is like those tomatoes
Old?
are next to rotten.
Yeah.
So like at a certain point, people are just picking up handfuls of slop and throwing
Yep.
it at
Yeah, okay.
each other.
Gross. You brought up the telescope earlier with the kids. There is the moment when Vincenzo is looking through the telescope at them swimming in the water. When Kirstie Alley and Steve Guttenberg are in the water, and he says, that's more like it."
Yeah,
The way he says it
Vincenzo.
is pretty creepy. I get, you know,
Yeah, like she should just be sitting there stroking a cat.
I
Yes,
that's more like it. My plan is coming together.
Yeah, like wouldn't it be funny if all this time you found out that after all this time you found out that Vincenzo was the one pulling the strings, like he secretly knew about this other girl who looked like Alyssa and orchestrated the whole thing just to get Clarice out of the picture, because he clearly hates her.
Well, I do like the subtle moments when you see that that opinion shine through on him. You
Oh
know,
yeah,
like
I love that scene when he's like, maybe you should take a drive, see where you end up.
yeah, things like that. Yeah. There was a moment where he's like, "I know you weren't talking. That wasn't who you were talking about. I know you weren't talking about Miss Kensington or something." Like, there's a moment like that. He's the butler. He's Alfred. He knows everything. He knows all the dirty secrets. He knows where the
Yeah.
bodies are buried because he buried them. Because he's a tough guy. Yeah. So they set up the notes ruse to try to get the two of them together. It's kind of clever because of this notes ruse, that's how we get Kirstie Alley in some nice clothes. Because how embarrassing would it have been for her to burst into the church if she was in jeans and t-shirt later on, right? That's the whole point of the notes ruse. Because it didn't work on Dad. They never got it to the dad. You'd think that as a character, Roger would understand that rushing the wedding to, hey, tomorrow
Probably red flag.
should be a pretty big red flag. Yeah.
Yeah, I should say.
And I think that goes back to what I was saying about how all the side characters are so outrageous. Like, there's no way in a million years that, like, these characters would have you going, "Oh, wait, that's perfectly normal." They are not behaving in a very normal way at all.
No. But maybe that's like the point of movies. If everybody behaves normal, then like there is no story. I was trying to think, like at the end of the movie, there's something that I like about movies like this specifically where it's like
The two normal people get together.
it takes place in the normal world, but it's just like ridiculous enough. It's both too ridiculous, no, maybe not too ridiculous to be believable, but it toes that line where it's just like everybody is acting like perfectly weird to make the story work. Just enough that you could believe it could happen, but it's still weird that it happened.
So what you're saying, if we had found out that the Olsen twins were long-lost siblings, then everyone else would have had to act normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the missing magical ingredient, is the fact that these two, there's no explanation for why they're identical. Okay.
Yeah, I actually think that's very true. If they had explained that, then we would have to be like, oh, it's, you know, everybody else kind of has to, now we live in like we live in the actual real world, so people have to be a little bit more true to form.
Yeah, yeah. So Amanda manages to convince Vincenzo that she's not Alyssa by showing off her scars, like we mentioned earlier. I enjoyed that scene. That was a great scene. But she needs the help, his help, to get the adults together. And so I like the moment where he slips Diane the business card to call the mysterious Lou if she ever runs into trouble. And why didn't you call Lou sooner? It would have been much easier to get everywhere you needed to go if you had access to a helicopter. Lou's some pretty tough shit. You shouldn't have said that, you know, you'll know when to use it. It should have been like, no, dude, call this guy. He'll get you everywhere you need to go fast.
Yeah, the only thing I kind of, like, I thought that too, like, what, but I forgot that she goes to their house first before, because yeah. I was like, oh, it'd be kind of a, I don't know how easy it would be. Like, I feel like if you commandeer a helicopter, you would get, like, one down and up.
Yeah.
It's not like we can just go
down in the middle of a baseball game. What a dick.
Like... All right, yeah.
Is it sad that his butler is his best man?
Like, yeah, it kind of is.
Has no other friends, yeah? Like, would Bruce Wayne have Alfred as his best man? Or would he choose, like, Dick Grayson? Has Bruce Wayne been married in any of the series?
Well, he did, actually. He married Catwoman. But I think Dick was his best man in that one, actually, if I remember right. Okay. She ends up not showing up, so I don't remember. I don't remember the rest of it.
Yeah, I fell off of Batman. I fell off of comics, period, unfortunately, but...
But it is kind of sad that Roger's best man is his butler.
Yeah.
He's also just because I'm like, I mean, I guess, you know, like, I guess I kind of assumed like maybe he started the company with buddies, but maybe he says he kind of just like bought the airspace himself.
He just got lucky.
And then maybe at that point it was too late. He just couldn't trust them, that anybody wanted to be his real friend and wanted him for anything more than his money.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's why they make a point of that Diane didn't realize who he was at first. Mm-hmm. To show that, oh, she was attracted to him before he had money. Or before she knew he had money. Not before he had money. But yeah, Diane, with the help of the helicopter pilot ruining a game of baseball in Central Park, makes it to the church on time to break up the wedding, and he says he can't. That's what it was. That I made a note of that because I thought that is such an elegant way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. It was nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna go back on what I said before and say I did kind of feel bad for Clarice at the wedding. Not, I still think she's bad, but I understand, like, you know, she's afraid of losing all this stuff. So I kind of felt bad up to the point where she decides she's going to strike a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I was like, okay, you lost me. You lost me again here.
Yeah.
And then the fact that she tries to, like, when she sees that there's two of them, she's like, oh, well, I couldn't get you, but I'll go for the other one. I'm like, why would you double down? I also was kind of like impressed by Vincenzo saying like if he touched her, he was gonna pop her.
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Vinny. willing to take one for the team.
Absolutely, yeah. But and like she starts screaming, "I have never been more humiliated in my life." It's like, well, you know, no, now you are, because you decided to make a big scene of it too by screaming, "I have never been more humiliated in my whole life."
Mm-hmm.
But then we get Wanna Bet, and the other Olsen twin steps on the skirt.
Yep.
Steps on the dress. I would have expected more of a, you know, a little bigger of a reaction over the fact that there were two identical children, though, all of a sudden.
I know.
There doesn't seem to like be nobody's... enough hoopla.
This should be the biggest shock that any of these people have ever encountered in their entire lives.
And especially when there's no explanation.
And there's no, and it just basically gets like a resounding meh.
Steve Guttenberg is stunned, but other than that, it's, oh, okay, yeah. No one else cares. But I guess Vincenzo knew it already, and he's, like, Roger's only friend. Like, it would have been a nice touch if, like, one side of the church was completely empty, because Roger has no one in his life.
Yeah, you don't even, like, you meet Clarice's dad, you don't meet a single person on his side of the family.
No.
His own father, if he's not dead, I guess, doesn't even come to, like, say hello to him.
Yeah, they really don't focus much at all on anything outside of, like, the five core people, or the six core people. They really don't want to complicate matters by introducing other characters. Oh, he can't have a best friend. That'll complicate matters. We're already mixing up who's who so many times in this movie. Actually, they stay the other for most of the movie, don't they? They really don't do a lot of switching back and forth.
No.
And maybe there's a little bit of that aspect missing from this movie, is the mixing up of stories. You know, like, huh, you're acting differently this time than you did the, you know.
Yeah, where it's like they lose track of conversations and stuff with people. Yeah. And yeah.
That could have been a fun little angle to throw in, but they had a lot going on already. But yes, and so the wedding is off, and the new family goes outside, and we get the creepy moment from the kids where they're like, well, so kiss already. So now they want to watch some adults kiss, which is weird. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I got to the end of this movie, and my last notes in this movie are, so there never is actually an explanation as to why these kids are identical.
You're still holding out hope, eh?
Yep, right till the end.
To the bitter end.
Yeah, just even a, by the way, Alyssa, I have something I need to tell you. You were adopted. Yeah, just anything.
Yeah, like, what if somewhere along the way, like, say, Vincenzo happened upon, like, a birth certificate that showed, oh, there were two of them. But we thought there was only one because of some weird situation.
Because there was some, like, gas leak in the room when the children were being born. And so everyone was too stoned to remember that there were actually two children born.
Yeah.
I don't know. If they can have shows about teenage pregnancies that where they didn't even know they were pregnant and ended up, like, shitting a baby into a toilet, you know, it's... anything is possible, I guess, when it comes to not knowing that there were actually two babies in there. But there we go. That's It Takes Two.
On that note.
On the note of shitting out a baby. Oh, boy. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 5.9 out of 10. A Metascore of 45. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 8% on the tomato meter. And an audience rating of 60%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, like Vincenzo socking her out if she had actually hit the kid, or like Clarice hit striking a child. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Stephen Holden, at the time this movie came out with the New York Times, says, under the direction of Andy Tennant, the Olsen sisters lay on the icky poo cuteness with several trowels, often delivering their lines as though they were citing the alphabet. That's so mean.
Yeah. I have to say that it wasn't the Olsen twins that sold me on this movie, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, once I got into it, they were fine. But I enjoyed the romance. I enjoyed the romantic comedy. I thought, like I mentioned, they had good chemistry, and I thought there was some sweet stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is funny. Like, I agree. The Olsen twins, I would say, at best as actors in this movie, are, like, serviceable.
Yeah.
But you can't... I am impressed by Kirstie Alley. Like, I think Kirstie Alley and Steve Guttenberg and Vincenzo and, like, the adult actors and even Clarice, like, they all play their roles so well that they ultimately kind of carry the movie, especially as an adult watcher now.
Yeah, like, it kind of makes you wonder what the idea of the split screen twin movie would have been like, you know, like a Mara Wilson or Christina Ricci.
Yeah,
like, it could have been a very different movie.
Yeah.
But with some higher quality twins.
An unnamed Rotten Tomatoes reviewer says, this is 5 out of 5 stars. This is one of my childhood favorite films. It has some great one-liners, and Kirstie Alley is fantastic in this. I had to leave a review as this does not deserve an 8% approval rating. It's good fun, and I still find it funny at 26. Lighten up, people.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that 8% blows my mind. The tomato meter, like, it's just, was that one critic that absolutely hated it? That's got to be what it is. I mean, I can't believe all the critics would have rated that low.
Yeah, to their point about one-liners, probably my favorite one was when the two pairs set out on the horse riding adventure, and it's it shows Amanda riding with Roger, and she's there, and he's like, oh, what happened to all those equestrian lessons that I got you and all that, like, ride straight. And she's like, are you asking me equestrian? And I was like, touche, whoever wrote this.
Well played.
Well played, sir. Another unnamed Rotten Tomatoes viewer. I swear that Rotten Tomatoes, there's something going on with Rotten Tomatoes right now, because the amount of reviewers who have been scrubbed lately is insane. I feel like something's happening. Anyways, conspiracies. 5 out of 5 stars. This is the movie of my childhood. Yes, it's predictable. Yes, it's wholesome and feel good. What's wrong with that? It's a timeless children's movie that I still quote to this day. If you're looking for an entertaining movie that will make you laugh and fall in love, this is it.
As movies about twins that switch places go, this is up there.
There is a line that I had forgot. I every now and then I watch movies and somebody says a line that I say in my own life fairly regularly, but I've forgotten from where it came. And in this movie, there is a line like that, and it's when Diane rescues Alyssa from the butt kisses, and the butt kiss comes and tries to stop her, and she says, "I would love nothing more than to kill you." So good.
And do you use that very regularly?
Yes, only in jest, though. Not for serious.
Okay.
And then I wanted, Nix Malik says 5 out of 5 stars, and I mostly just wanted to do battle with him because he says, just to put it out there, this film was released in 1995. The Parent Trap was released... Oh, I don't want to do battle with him. He says The Parent Trap was released in 1998 for anyone that says it's being copied. So a beef I have in researching reviews for this movie is that so many dum-dums reference the Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap. Like, oh, this movie just, like, copied blah, blah, whatever. And I just want to be like... Or they say... Wait, am I stupid?
They they don't realize that there's one from the 70s.
Yeah, they don't really there's one from the 70s.
That the Lindsay Lohan one is not the original. Yes. They don't know that. Okay. Okay. Yes.
But now I'm trying to maybe I'm the dummy. I'll need to look back. Anyways, Tyler T says 5 out of 5 stars. One of my all-time classics. My brother and I are also twins who look exactly alike. So God knows we've seen every twin movie of the 90s. To hell with any negative review over a predictable plot. Shall we give the Goonies a bad review due to its predictable conclusion? Classics. Damn those who disagree. The Olsen twins are poor, unfortunate, and unbelievably talented stars.
Do twins watch twin movies to be seen?
I don't know. So that they'll know.
I'm finally being represented on screen.
Yeah, I bet. Is that a thing? Twin representation in film?
Yeah, I don't know. So often we have to play doubles of each other, but we don't get to be our full selves. I mean, look at the Olsen twins. They made a career out of playing one girl for many years.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they can go back and watch episodes and go, oh, that's totally me.
A Full House? Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all I got.
That's all you got? Okay. Right on. So, yeah, except for the atrocious 8% out of the tomato meter, I mean, you know, we're 50s, 60s. We're in that. We're floating in that range. Yeah, for a first viewing, I mean, this isn't going to get me on any kind of kick whatsoever where I want to go down a rabbit hole of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movies. I'm not going to start binging their full catalog or anything. But I enjoyed this. I had a fun time. I thought it was a sweet movie. I enjoyed the chemistry between Steve Guttenberg and Kirstie Alley. Like, I thought that little love story was fun. There is an overacting quality to everyone, but especially all the side characters. But whatever. Prince and the Pauper. I wish that they had tied the some sort of relation. I couldn't get behind Prince and Pauper. I needed Parent Trap. I needed Long Lost Twins. But other than that, like, I really enjoyed this, and it wasn't because of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, but I didn't hate them in it either. It was a fun movie. It was a sweet movie. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I kind of liked it. Yeah.
Nice.
So even though I was dreading watching this when you suggested it, you know, because at first I was like, oh, okay, I guess. Yeah, no, it's... You say this is what the show is about. It's true. This is what the show is about. This was your childhood right here. But good movie. It was fun. It was sweet. It deserved to get more than $19 million at the box office. Should have been up at like $40 million at the box office.
Yeah, I mean,
Colin,
I...
It Takes Two. Yeah, here we go.
Like I said, I haven't watched this movie probably since I was in, I don't know, I'm going to say like the fifth grade.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like shocked at how much I still like this movie. Like, how much it made me smile, like, even from the jump, like, that baseball scene with, and everything, like, it just all came, like, rolling back, and I think it's just, like, I look forward to being able to watch this movie with my daughter, because I think it still holds up well, even as, like, I think, like, as a fun movie for kids, like, today.
Fun little family film,
yeah. Like, it's just a nice, fun family film, and so
that isn't Paw Patrol or
exactly. And I just thought, like, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, yeah, it's the like Wicked Stepmother. You got like the Wicked Stepmother story in there too, and I just like Steve Guttenberg a lot in this movie, and I like Kirstie Alley a lot in this movie. Every one of the adult characters, like I said, watching this movie as a kid, it was all about the Olsen twins and their, what was going on with them. Mm-hmm. But like now having become an adult, I really took note of all the adult performances, and I thought they were all great, all funny in their own way. And yeah, 8% to me is an injustice for It Takes Two. Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's like, you know, it's not like anything.
Well, it's not 100%.
It's not anything special.
Yeah.
Like, but I think that like 60% is a good rating for it. Like, I would say in between 60, 70.
Yeah, it deserves far more respect than I gave it going into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how one way that I look at it is going into it. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Let's see what you got, Olsen twins. And it was a well-made movie. It wasn't just a piece of trash that was thrown together. And, you know, let's put our current little show ponies, the Olsen twins, into this movie. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that it wasn't written as an Olsen twins movie may have been what helped that fact, you know.
Yeah, it'd be funny to go like watch this movie and compare it to one of their ones where it's like clearly
How the West Was Fun. Or,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I do need to binge some Mary-Kate and Ashley. Go watch all their old mysteries.
Just watch it with your kids so that it doesn't look weird.
No, I want it to look as weird as possible.
How dare you interrupt me when I'm watching Mary-Kate and Ashley?
I'm working! God!
Don't look at me.
Don't you know what the sock on the door means?
Oh, God.
It wasn't supposed to mean that.
Oh God, burn this episode. I want no part.
Well, there we go. That's It Takes Two, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you wanna if you like that show, one thing you could do to really help us out is go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us a review, like and subscribe our show, and give us some stars. Doesn't matter what you say in the review, but really giving us 5 stars in a review just helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond, Or if you want to go above and beyond and help us out, go over to whatever app it is you listen. I just did that part. I'm still too thrown off by my laughing fit. Or just tell somebody. Oh boy, just word of mouth, telling somebody and saying, hey, there's this show I like. That goes a long way for building an audience for a podcast. Or if you want to be our goddamn hero, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and donate to the show. Become part of our Patreon family and you become an executive producer on the show, which means you get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about it on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you'd like to hear more from me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Whew. Broke me at the end. Jeez.